Daniel, it's March.
It is. It sure is. Which means
we have stories.
We've completed an entire month. Good for us. Yeah. February is over. Mm-hmm. And that means we have an entire month of food stories to discuss one-on-one.
Yep. As listeners.
Into the mics.
Who are familiar with the show know, at the end of every month, we talk about the most interesting, weirdest, and wackiest food stories. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do that right now.
Anything else you want to say? Should we, any preamble you'd like to deliver the audience before jumping into this month of food stories?
No, I just had a very delicious and overpriced coffee drink, so I am raring and ready to go.
Wow. That's such a classic Amanda thing.
What do you mean?
Just a half enjoy. I had a delicious and overpriced.
Well, I mean, $7 is a lot of money.
Yeah. Did you know when you offered, we went upstairs to our local coffee shop and you offered to, you said, yeah, I'm going to buy, I'm gonna buy you a coffee. Did you know that our two coffees were going to come up to 14 or 15?
When I said, this is on me,
yeah.
I was staring at the screen that said my coffee was $7. So I was very aware of what I was offering you.
That's like two movies like 6 years ago. I don't know if that's
weird,
even close
weird
to true.
To
anyway,
let's talk about stories.
If you love this show, please remember to do all the things like subscribe to it, rate it on your platform of choice, and shoot us emails with feedback at upsell@eater.com. And let's get into it. Do you want to start us off? What's your first story?
My first story is about the Delta and Diet Coke Plain Crush napkins that they had to discontinue.
Yeah.
So I didn't know this was a thing. I haven't flown Delta in a little bit. But apparently they had these napkins that came with all the sodas. And they said, because you're on a plane full of interesting people and hey, ... you never know, you flip the napkin over and you have an opportunity to leave your name and phone number and give it to someone else.
The small print on the back says, be a little old school. Write down your number and give it to your plane crush. You never know.
You never know.
Let me start. One, best part of this thing is that this whole story is being referred to as plane crush.
Plane crush.
Which is just in the subtext, like the smaller text on the bottom. Hilarious, because the first thing that I thought of when I saw this was getting, I thought that people were mad that they were making like a plane crash joke, right? So I was like, well, plane crush as a thing.
That's terrible.
That's a really stupid thing to write on a napkin because it is so close to plane crash.
Don't call the campaign plane crush.
But they didn't. So I feel like here I am. I am the defender of Delta and Diet Coke. I want to make it clear that they did not intentionally refer to this campaign as plane crush.
That's just what people on Twitter called it?
That's what it seems like people are calling it, the plane crush saga. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, but let's start with you. What do you think of this? What do you think of...
I think it's horrible.
Okay.
Horrible.
Go on.
First of all, when you're on a plane, you just don't want to be bothered. Like, take all, like...
Can I put a little tease here and say my first ever girlfriend I met on an airplane? But go on.
Okay. I like to think of...
I don't know if we were...
All right,
technically girlfriend and boyfriend, so but go on.
Okay, sure. I have a girlfriend who met her husband on a plane, so I'm sure it can happen, but I'm just going to say, personally, whenever I'm on a plane or in an airport, I like to think of it as like a different reality.
Okay.
Like no one, that I won't see anyone I know. That's always my hope, but like it's always so jarring to see someone you know in an airport. I don't want to be bothered. I don't want anyone to talk to me. But second of all, no one wants unsolicited phone numbers.
Yes. Yeah.
Like ever.
Yeah.
Like I imagine there was just no woman in the room during the marketing meetings for this. You know?
There couldn't have been.
No.
Because
no
woman's
like,
yes,
let's encourage strange men to give me their phone numbers and hit on me on an airplane.
No. The people who came up with this campaign were recently thawed out from being cryogenically frozen in like the 1940s.
Right. Yeah.
So even if, let's say, okay, creepy person wants to hit on someone on an airplane, at least, like, you at least have to make some kind of connection. Because if you just get a napkin and it's got someone's name and number on it and you don't really know who it's from, that's
weird.
Useless to you. Even if it's creepy, but it's also never going to do anything.
No.
So, yeah, I mean.
You never know, .. That's the
right.
Part that freaks that's me out too. It's like, that's scary. That sounds threatening.
Even if their goal was to be the airplane matchmaker, this is not a good way of going about it.
There used to be an airline that did this where you could message between seats.
What? Yeah.
I think maybe it was Virgin.
Yeah.
I think the idea there was that you might be flying with someone you know and you could like chat with them.
Yeah.
But with that, that even freaked me out because it's like, oh, God, anyone could message me at any moment.
Right. Wait, that's for real? Like you might get a message all of a sudden on your screen being like, hi, I'm in 4C. You walked by on your way to the bathroom. I really liked your Goldie sweater.
P.S. I'm wearing a gray sweater from Philadelphia restaurant chain Goldie.
Wow, we need a free plug noise. Free plug
like
noise.
Amanda racked up one tahini shake with that plug for Goldie.
Wow. Anyway.
How long do you think this campaign lasted before they discontinued it?
I think a couple weeks. I think they turn it away. But the funny thing with these is like once those napkins are in print and they're in the system, it's not that easy to pull them all. Like all their PR statements were like, we're in the process of pulling these from the yeah. plane. So it's not like you can you just pull it from the internet. It's like, no, we got to go on all the planes and find those plane crush
and then
napkins.
It ends up in some like discount dollar store.
I bet not. I would buy those in a heartbeat. Yeah. I would want them all. I still have original Four Locos with alcohol on them. I want all of the failed products that are.
That'd be a fun museum.
Yeah, for sure. Anything positive about this? I appreciate the innovation. Like I like food products that are interactive. So I appreciate that they are trying to do a new
thing. Trying a new thing. Well, and I will say in this tweet that called them out as creepy that we linked to in the Eater story, a lot of the response to it, there are a lot of people being like, it's cute. You'd only be mad if you don't get a phone number.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so classic.
Yeah.
That's so like, wow, screw all
this. This is hilarious. I find it funny. Carry on, Coca-Cola.
Oh man, all those people are like trying to troll the libtards. Like it's not.
There are all these memes like you need to relax. Yeah. Oh, for heaven's sake, this is cute. Not
the
creepy.
Left wing has gotten ridiculous.
This is brilliant. Way to go, Coca-Cola and Delta. Wow, a lot of positive response to this.
I got a question for you. Do you think I'm someone who talks to people on airplanes and in transportation, in transit?
Ooh, that's a great question. Because I feel like you really could be. But I'm going to say no.
I feel it out. Okay. No, but I did. I seriously met my first ever kind of girlfriend.
You were trying to get us back to that story.
No, I wasn't.
Tell us about your girlfriend.
She was lovely.
Does it ever backfire and the person is like so into talking and then you're like,
100% yes. The worst one that's ever happened to me is I was sitting next to some lady who worked for iHeartRadio who's flying to Vegas to produce this big fancy show. And I was like, oh, she asked me about something about, I had some music app open on my computer. She asked me about it. It was something interesting. Talk for a second. Then this old woman next to us was like, I love concerts. And then would not leave us alone. Both of us the whole time. She assumed we both work for iHeartRadio. And she was like, have you ever seen Garth Brooks? And she was like, no. And I was like, I don't work for them. And she's like, what row do you recommend sitting in when you go to a concert in a venue that you haven't sat in before? Like, it was insane. So yeah, that was a major backfire. But I think in general, the odds work out. Shall we move on to the next story?
Yes, please.
Hello.
Hi, Matt.
Up next, huge news for the Los Angeles dining scene. The Michelin Guide is finally returning to the city.
Yeah, no, it's an incredible day. Okay, sorry about that motorcyclist.
This is Matthew Kang, editor of Eater LA, to give us this story.
It was big news because the Michelin Guide left Los Angeles. They were here from 2008 to 2010, and then they were unceremoniously, they blinkered out of town because they got nobody cared. I mean, it just wasn't as big of a deal in the late aughts. And you know, LA restaurants are casual. They're not fancy. They're not fine dining and like wine pairings and tasting menus and all that stuff. And just it just didn't resonate with the diners here.
Well, and I would also say because it was 2008, or it was, you know, they left in 2010. I feel like it was connected to the recession a little bit.
Oh, definitely. I mean, in 2010, it was like burgers and pork belly and gastropubs were all the hot things. Like, nobody was opening fancy restaurants. And so it just didn't make sense for the guide to even be here. And the restaurants that they picked were, like, so irrelevant. They had restaurants in there I hadn't even heard of. I'm like, what? Today they announced that the guide is going to be a California guide. So San Francisco and the Bay Area, which had been around since 2006, is going to be kind of rolled into this huge guide for the entire state. And, I mean, I think that's good news, not just for L.A., but also for San Diego, for Santa Barbara, for Monterey, a lot of little culinary gems spread out the state that can now get, you know, the recognition that they deserve. The not-so-secret deal here is that Visit California, which is the tourism board, made the announcement in conjunction with the Michelin Guide. So
it was probably part of the deal.
Dots, I mean, we could probably assume that, like, hey, the state of California wants tourists to come here, and it's not just going to be focused on one city. It's going to be focused on an entire region. It's good for all the restaurants here. But, hey, it's going to cost you. And probably making this guide is not cheap, right? If all these inspectors are going around and supposedly spending their own money or the company's money, then it's going to take some money to do that.
Yeah, that's why I think they also retracted after the recession. So it was that the dining scene was getting smaller in terms of fine dining, but also, like, they didn't have the money to pay for this kind of thing. So it's good to see that they're getting funding again at the same time that L.A. is kind of having an explosive few years in terms of, you know, growth and dining.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very validating. A lot of the chefs I talked to, sort of like the back room conversations and the texts that I had, people are thrilled. A lot of chefs are really excited. They want to bring their A game. They want to get starred. And I think for especially a younger generation of chefs who didn't work at Michelin-starred restaurants in New York or in Europe, like, they're excited because they want that validation, right? That, like, hey, like, I have a one or two or three Michelin star restaurant. Like, I'm in the club, so to speak, of these highly admired restaurants. But, man, I have this huge problem because I still think that LA's dining scene is not in that mold anymore. It's still not. I mean, is a taco truck going to get a Michelin star?
Well, don't you think they've evolved a little bit in terms of what they consider Michelin star worthy? Like, if you look at what they're giving stars to in Asia in terms of, like, food carts and stalls and things like that?
I do think so. And I had this conversation with Ryan Sutton late last night. I mean, he and I were texting until, like, midnight LA times. And he said, you know, while Michelin Guide has made a lot of adjustments in terms of its expectations, in terms of the kind of restaurants that it gives stars to, I would still say by and large, if you look at the New York or the Chicago or the San Francisco guides, those one, two, and three Michelin star restaurants are expensive, fancy places.
Yeah, they're still pretty
the
fancy.
The exception to the rule is the ramen joint or the stand in Bangkok. I mean, maybe one restaurant will get a Michelin star that's like under $20 in Los Angeles. And that would make like international news. But I would say that I wonder if a restaurant even like Bestia, which is still pretty casual, you know, it's pretty, I think it's a really good restaurant. It's highly regarded, relatively affordable, you know, in like the $50 to $100 range. Will it get a Michelin star? I hope so. I think it deserves it.
I think this is a good place to point out that you run a post that I love on Eater LA every year that is the hypothetical Michelin guide, like what you would give Michelin stars to. And restaurateurs get really pissed off at you if they move down or up or if they move down or off the list.
It's unbelievable because I started doing this fan fiction hypothetical Michelin guide that, by and large, the food media absolutely hates and resents. And chefs will, I mean, their response to it is unbelievable. I've had, I don't want to say who, but I've had chefs personally appeal to me, say, how could you take me off that? How could you demote me from one star to zero? Or how could you?
Everyone's just so thirsty.
Look, I clearly say this is just my opinion and just a projection. It's for fun. It's not serious. I'm not a Michelin inspector. But also, I also try my best with it and try to, I think that if you, over the years, a lot of the comments on it are people saying, like, you know what, like, this is actually pretty good. Okay. Like, this is accurate. I agree.
Wait, so did Bestia make your 2018 list?
I believe it did. I also think that there's a lot of people who criticize it and say, hey, like, this is ridiculous. You have way too many restaurants on here, blah, blah, blah. Because the original Michelin Guide, when it was here in L.A. in 2008, 2009, it had maybe 20 restaurants on it.
Right.
It was a small number, and there were no three-star restaurants. And I have two restaurants in my hypothetical guide as three stars, and Naka and Vespertine. And, you know, I think those are – I have no idea if they're going to get three stars. It would be amazing for the city because that would be a first if we did receive a three Michelin star restaurant. But I think at the same time, the average diner is pretty much just like, well, that's good. It's not going to change how I eat. It's not going to make a difference to me. I already know that LA has great food. We don't need the Michelin Guide to validate us.
Right. It's more the chefs that feel like they need it, whereas you think the media consumer doesn't really care.
I think they care. I think it's sort of, I'm surprised by the ubiquity of the Michelin Guide. I would say 10 years ago, it was very much like, oh, like you must be a foodie if you even knew what Michelin stars were.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, the average person who has, you know, goes to a decent restaurant a couple times a week definitely knows what a Michelin star is and what it means and what it sort of denotes for a dining experience. And I think that's good for the Michelin Guide. It's definitely, it's become an international standard. And
final question. Are you happy that this is happening?
Well, I guess I'm sad because my hypothetical Michelin guide will no longer have any relevance.
We'll have to put that to bed.
Did you enjoy the power while you had it?
No, I actually kind of dreaded it, and I'm very happy I don't have to do that anymore. In fact, maybe I'll just take it off the website now.
So oh, no, leave it up. We got to compare. We got to see if you predicted right. I also this as part of the narrative of, like, investments in California. Like, if you just look at the media space with the LA Times revamping their food section and the New York Times hiring California critic, and I think the San Francisco Chronicle with their new critic has a little bit of new life. So it's kind of an exciting time to be dining and writing about California.
I almost feel like San Francisco's kind of bummed that they're not exclusive anymore.
They don't have their own, yeah. I mean, they'll probably still take up a lot of the guide.
I'm sure they will. And LA and San Francisco, I wouldn't be surprised if they were 90% of the stars given, maybe more. It's going to be a huge focus. But I also think that that's probably how they got the money, right?
Yeah.
The California goes, oh, you want some cash? Like, you better be ready to get
the
stars out to Bakersfield. Because Bakersfield and Sacramento, I mean, the press release today said Sacramento, one of the great, I forget what the exact words were, but they basically were like, we can't wait to have the Michelin Guide in Sacramento, one of the world's culinary capitals. I'm like, okay, that might be a stretch.
Tang doesn't buy it.
How many hypothetical stars did Sacramento get?
I love Sacramento, but I don't think that they're a culinary capital of the world. Just being honest. I do feel bad. I think LA should have its own guide. San Francisco should have its own guide. But if this is how it's going to happen, then that's fine with me.
Cool. All right. Well, Matt Kang, thank you for your insight.
Thanks for calling.
Congrats to LA Chefs for getting the, I don't know, potential recognition they maybe deserve.
Yeah, and being free from the reign, the authoritarian reign of Matt Kang.
Matt Kang and his hypothetical list.
Oh, I'll be so relieved not to get those angry texts.
Now you'll just get texts about the Eater 38.
Oh, that'll never stop.
It'll
Thanks,
never
Amanda,
stop.
For
yep.
that. I guess I have that burden for the rest of my career.
Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/eat.
ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans through thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job.
As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day.
And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/eat. That's ZipRecruiter.com/EAT. ZipRecruiter.com/eat. ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. And now back to stories.
Do you have any thoughts about Martha Stewart making cannabis products for pets?
I'll tell you an interesting story about Martha Stewart that I heard recently.
Great.
Okay.
Tell me.
So are you familiar with Comedy Central roasts?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're not, basically one random celebrity will get roasted during one of these things. And there's a whole group of comedians and celebrities that will be there to basically talk shit about them. Mm-hmm. And it's all done in love. When you have celebrities like Martha Stewart or, I don't know, whoever random celebrities are always on the dais, they call them. Mm-hmm. They are paired up with professional comedians that help them write all their roast jokes. I was watching a thing where Ann Coulter took all the jokes and rewrote them and totally bombed and was just horrible. But Martha Stewart, this guy's name is Tony Hinchcliffe. He was saying, but on the other hand, like, I worked with Martha Stewart and the first call with her she was just like, Tony, I want to crush. I just like, give me everything. I will do anything. I just want to destroy. And she pushes, like, her jokes are pretty risky.
I mean, I believe it. I believe that she just wants to crush in every single scenario.
So I just think, like, Martha Stewart is the ultimate game person. She is just absolutely game.
Yeah.
My question with myself is, like, am I over it a little bit? Like, she's done the Snoop cannabis thing.
Right, right. She's like, this, it's too much.
What do you do to stay relevant? I don't think people are as interested in her aesthetic of perfect dinner party thing anymore.
She's expanding her brand. She's going with the times.
So, like, I think she deserves more hero status than I give her on a day-to-day basis. So I'm all for it. I personally do not care about CBD stuff at all. As my rule about that kind of thing is, like, I hate that stuff being in things. If you like CBD, take a little CBD and then eat all the brownies that you want, mm-hmm. and keep it separate. I like to dose accordingly, even though I'm not the biggest fan of CBD.
But how are you going to dose your pets without putting it in their
food? I totally forgot about the pet mm-hmm. thing.
It's for pets.
That's what I mean. I mean, she's just so game.
Like, she's like, whatever, sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Are you giving a pet a better life by giving it CBD? What do you think about this?
I mean,
you have no pets.
I don't.
Have no pets.
I don't have pets.
What do you think about it? When you first saw this, take me back 36 hours ago.
Oh, I mean, like 2 hours ago.
2 hours ago.
I was like, what am I going to talk about? I, like you, just find it interesting that she's expanding her brand in this way. And she's trying to stay relevant. I'm like, mm-hmm. good for Martha. Mm-hmm. I think she already has icon status. It's like, all right, here. I don't think it's deluding her at all. The idea of giving CBD to pets, I don't know. It's bizarre. Like, if your pet is sick and needs the actual cannabis, mm-hmm. then you figure out ways to get your pet the cannabis.
For sure.
If it's just like the CBD, which is kind of like, I don't know how well it works in general. Like, it seems like kind of a...
Here's my... if you're worried about your dog or pet being bored and you want to give it a better overall life, then like... hey, maybe it's bored because you've taken it in as a freaking pet and you should just not have a pet.
Whoa.
Well, seriously, but like, or else, what's the difference between just constantly drugging it
that's where we'd go with this.
Well, it's crazy. It's
just
like. Are
you anti-dog ownership?
I'm not anti-dog ownership, but if you're like really, like, I'm really worried. My dog hates living with me and it's really bored. Don't have a dog.
Do people say that all the time?
I don't know, but if you're feeding, if you're like constantly giving your dog CBD to enjoy its life more.
Sick.
Maybe if it's an old arthritic dog.
Yeah.
Arthritic would also be a funny name for a dog. Food delivery app Caviar. You know, that app that I use way too much.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, it's exactly like Uber Eats or...
They do delivery for restaurants.
They do delivery for restaurants.
They have a higher markup.
Yeah.
Because they do it for the restaurant instead of the restaurant doing it. So like Seamless, most of the restaurants do it themselves. Caviar, they send special people, right?
Yeah. And they go to fancier big city restaurants mm-hmm. that aren't typically available for delivery. So, a lot of restaurants that are actually great and, you know, whatever. Anyway, they're catching some flack online because through a collaboration with Pineapple, they have a label called Women Powered with Pineapple.
Mm-hmm. Pineapple Collective, I think it's called.
Yeah, Pineapple Collective. Led by ladies, picked by Pineapple. The criticism that they've got is it's kind of just like a section of their app.
Uh-huh.
that is all just the list of places that are women powered. In order to suggest a new women powered restaurant, you fill out a little Google form. Mm-hmm. The problem is like it's not, you don't know who the woman is or women are that are involved, right? So it could be the chef, it could be a sous chef. It could be an owner. It could be a co-owner. So it's just like a vague list of...
Like, is there a lady here somewhere? Is there a lady in the house?
Yeah. Honestly, they're going in with a megaphone being like, hey, we got this new pineapple list. Any women here? Like, it's not...
Right.
I don't know. It doesn't... It feels a little thirsty to me.
Yeah. I mean, I see...
I know you're so over this kind of
thing.
They
meant well. I mean, my take is always going to be the same, which is don't call out the ladies. Just like, if I were caviar... I would say, hey, we're committed now to making sure that we have TK percentage of women-owned businesses on our platform. And then not call them out, just, like, do that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to make a big deal out of it, you tell people, like, oh, we make sure we have this many restaurants or this percentage of people. But, like, trying to, I don't know, play it up in that way, where, like, oh, I have this icon and there's no real rigidity around it, just seems really silly.
I mean, also, or just have a section called, like, I don't know, the pineapple picks, and just don't call it, don't say that it's
yeah.
Just, it's funny seeing all the different ways that people are trying trying things like this.
Yeah, like they're trying, so okay, good. But if you try to like extend it out, like what would it look like if it were other groups of people and you were giving them little icons and how that might be a bad look, you know? Mm-hmm. Like there's a black person behind this restaurant, like that wouldn't really go over well either. So yeah, maybe just commit to being more inclusive in the restaurants on your platform.
Mm-hmm. What if there was a section for like, I don't know, bearded head chefs?
Sure.
Yeah. I actually think now thinking about it, it'd be fun on Caviar if they did have really silly, because it's one of the biggest problems with choosing food delivery is they have their kind of Netflix suggestions for you up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, it's like impossible. It's like going to it's kind of like going on Netflix when you don't know what you want.
Yeah, that's what Seamless is like.
It's very hard to pick. So I'm always down when they have ridiculous, like anytime they have a ridiculous list of things, I'm
I'm going to limit it. Women owned places is ridiculous.
I'm not saying that's ridiculous. I'm just saying anytime on Caviar, they have a ridiculous list like healthy-ish choices or whatever. Uh-huh. Or like...
Brought to you by Bon Appetit.
Right, exactly. Or like time to spice it up. Mm-hmm. Try one of these 10 restaurants. I'm like, wow, who's choosing this? What a ridiculous list. But also, okay, I'm going to limit my selection to this thing to actually make this possible so I can eat lunch before dinner time.
Tyranny of choice.
Maybe not this list, but I'm all for Caviar lists. Bearded chefs would be down for...
So Liz trying to make a societal impact, though, albeit badly, no. But you would love some sort of sorting mechanism that's just actually ridiculous.
Yeah, or all the bearded men. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Cool.
Right.
Okay, cool.
So cancel the women list. Let's get a guy list going.
Can we just make it more about men?
Amanda, I feel like it is time. Is it time? Are we ready to eulogize meal service kits?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Would that make you happy if this was all done?
I don't have a horse in this race. We should just say that there's been a lot of pieces that have come out recently saying, well, Blue Apron has been just crumbling for months now.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these meal service kits, some of them are going under and none of them are getting the up chart emoji.
Right.
I mean, it's a very new thing. It's not a thing that had been done before. It's like this, you know, very startup-y world.
Well, the funny thing is when these things started first happening, mm-hmm. Blue Apron sunk a ton of money into the market. Like they got all these fundraisers and they kind of blew everybody else out of the water. So there were all these other ones at the same time and they all shut down. Mm-hmm. And now it's Blue Apron and like a couple of other well-funded ones and now they're failing too.
Does it make you – Do you want them to fail? Do you care?
I also don't have a horse in the race. I think my biggest things with these meal kits is that it's so wasteful.
So wasteful. Like cooking, for one, in New York sucks. I always tell people like it sucks to buy a single onion because you use a quarter of the onion and then you don't know what to do with the onion. And so it makes sense. You keep using the onion all week. Yeah. But like that mentality is annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you get an onion that is wrapped in plastic that is next to eight other things that are wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
And then the whole thing is wrapped in plastic and then it's delivered to you. Yeah, and there's just so many moving parts.
3 teaspoons of this thing. And it's just like, oh, God.
Yeah, it's kind of insanity.
What I find funny about it is they're saying a lot of people sign up, learn how to cook through Blue Apron, mm-hmm. and then they're like, oh, I don't need this anymore. I've learned these skills.
Well, so that's a great thing.
Yeah, so that's great. It's bad for the business, but great for people.
You ask a lot of home cooking professionals, people who write cookbooks for the home cook, and you ask them, hey, how do you feel about Blue Apron? They're like, across the board, it's always like, it's a good gateway.
To get people cooking.
It inspires people because like cooking simple things is not that hard. Mm-hmm. I've been cooking my whole life, so I like a lot of people see it as learning a new language. It's something kind of that comes second nature to me, so I'm not. But like people are scared to turn on the stove.
Yeah, it helps them learn the building blocks.
And things are actually pretty easy.
And then they've like, okay, I've made a salmon before.
I'm a freaking good cook, okay? I don't know if I got that across.
Well, once you...
Yeah. I was born in a kitchen.
We understand that Daniel knows how to cook.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, I think it's a good gateway. Mm-hmm. But it's bad for the business model because once you figured everything out, you don't need to subscribe forever.
Yeah. Also, go to restaurants and read about them, you know?
Well, Blue Apron people don't cook every single night.
It is interesting to watch, to be conscious and watch the rise and fall of something like this. Mm-hmm. And there aren't many things that I have seen that for such a huge spike and then such a huge crash.
Well, I think we see it a lot in the food space.
With trends.
No. I mean, with businesses because mm-hmm. big money investors don't understand that food is really hard. And so I think maybe we'll see less and less of it. But we've seen these things like with Maple and mm-hmm. and other food-centric businesses that people think can scale. And they realize like actually changing people's habits and also dealing with the food system is incredibly difficult. It's not like a tech platform where you can just scale it infinitely.
Because at the end of the day, there's living things involved.
Yeah.
You know?
Wrapped in plastic. Have you heard about parents throwing slices of cheese at babies?
No.
Well, let me tell you about it. It's this thing that's been happening on social media around the world mm-hmm. where people throw slices of cheese at unsuspecting babies.
Rather than babies that are like, I'm ready for my cheese.
Well, yeah, I guess they, yeah, yeah, all at right. babies.
Yeah, why?
Because it's funny, I guess. It's funny.
It is funny. As someone with a newborn baby, how evil is it? How evil?
I think it's pretty terrible.
But it's not. Like, the baby will recover. It's not going to be injured by the cheese. Are we talking like a Kraft American
slice?
No,
the baby won't be injured by the cheese.
Traumatized at all.
No, won't remember. It's just weird. And, like, weird to prank your baby for social media. Like, that's what I think is weird.
Yeah, 100%. Any kind of baby exploitation for social media is a disaster. I mean, we see so many, like, the Instagram accounts and stuff of, like, you know, not going to call out any names here, but if there was
about food baby?
If there was an Instagram account where someone had put babies next to food for the purpose of Instagram.
Turn it into a brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
if
bad.
If that existed, that would be bad. I would be like, that seems exploitative.
Better or worse than throwing cheese? Worse
because it's constant.
For
this is
a
one-time thing. If you told me that you did this, I would not be shocked. I feel like that's... I kind of think like that's something I like about you, that you are a practical person who would know that there was going to be no long-term effects and if it would really if you would really enjoy
but
it.
But do you think that like, I mean, knowing my, you I guess I don't want to go in, I just don't want to go into
it.
A
wheel of Parmesan.
I was going to say that's not really my social media vibe, but I don't want to get into analysis of me and what I would do.
God forbid we would talk about you. God forbid it would just be
Dan and I are having a day, guys. Anyway, so
you
this has been a trend
examined.
And now people have expanded it to adults.
Sorry, I've forgotten.
And
do we know what kind of cheese it is?
It's like a Kraft slice.
Cheese. Okay, cool.
Chrissy Teigen has tweeted about it.
Has she done it?
She says, I love a prank as much as anybody, but I cannot get myself to throw cheese at my adorable, unsuspecting baby who has all the hope and trust in the world in me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make the case that I mean, you know, again, as a mother, of a newborn, it's important to love your child, right? Like, if not, mm-hmm. why wouldn't you just leave it in a box with a feeding tube until it can talk, right? Uh-huh. The point is like everything you do, even before the baby is conscious, is important in the baby's development. It's important to feel trust and feel love. So I guess having, like, doing this thing, which is even a tiny bit malicious, mm-hmm. is not going to be helpful for the baby's development.
No, no, but like it won't
help.
It can't help. It won't hurt. But you feel like kind of a dick doing it, I imagine. People are doing it to their dogs now because they're like, I don't have a baby. I'm going to throw this cheese on my dog.
At least the dog will eat it.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, and the dog will be like, oh, I just missed it.
Well, yeah, oops, better work on my reflexes. I'm going to enjoy this piece of cheese now.
But, like, I do find it cute when people give babies lemons and then you see their reaction, which is kind of what this is, right? Yeah. They're throwing the cheese so that the baby will make a funny reaction.
Well, as a food media professional, I appreciate that people are expanding their baby's palates early
but
on
it's,
in life.
It's
I think
just
it's really
so they'll
important.
Make a funny face.
Thank you so much for listening to the Eater Upsell. My name is Daniel Janine. That is Amanda Clute.
Hey.
We will be back next week with something else. And until then, you know, eat things. I don't know. I'm just trying. Come on. Can we have a catchphrase? Everyone's got a catchphrase.
Eat. So you want that to be our catchphrase? Yeah.